one that I'm sure Stephen Mayne has been considering for some time. Stephen Mayne, shareholder activist, good afternoon.
Hi, Lindy, how are you?
I'm very well. It's 19 to 6. I want to talk to you about airlines, particularly Qantas, with Jeff Dixon, the chief, coming out today. Grim predictions about the industry overall. Rising fuel prices, the same excuse, but saying that many airlines will close across the world, 100,000 jobs will be lost. I spoke with Peter Somerville from the Pilots Association earlier this afternoon, saying not surprised. It's been talked about for 18 months and there's an inevitability about it all.
Well, I think to start with, you've got to say that Jeff Dixon is Australia's most pessimistic CEO. I mean, his job is, you know, he doesn't run the flying kangaroo, he runs the mangy roo. He's always saying the world, you know, we're all ruined, the skies are going to fall in, whilst he runs one of the two or three most profitable, best-run airlines in the world. And he does that for reasons of industrial relations, can't afford the pay rises, and for government protection.
Help us.
And Qantas is one of the most, you know, protected, supported airlines in the world. But still, what he says is true, you know, and it's because of the oil price. So I'm surprised it's only 100,000 jobs worldwide. And I think his prediction that there will be a series of mega global airlines created is highly unlikely, just because of the whole sort of protectionist nature of it, the airline industry. And if there's one company that most civilised, developed countries want to have, it's their flag carrier. It's an airline. So Australia has a law which says foreigners can only own 49%. The US have a law, of Qantas, the US have a law that says no foreigner can buy more than 25% of a US airline. So whilst, you know, Emirates is very strong, I can't see President Obama saying...
That's being preemptive of you.
Well, you know, that's where it's probably going to go. But you can't see him saying, come on in, Emirates, let a Middle Eastern government buy a US Air. Or,
I think that should be his first decision, whoever that person might be. It might be President McCain.
Yeah, well, they're very proud of the Americans. When the Dubai ports bought up P&O... It didn't cause any issues here, and so 50% of our stevedoring businesses is owned by the government of Dubai.
I didn't know that.
And that's fine. And in the US, there's a massive political backlash and all these congressional inquiries, and you know the flag waving goes on. So we're very liberal when it comes to foreign investment, and the Americans are very parochial. And there is no more parochial industry than airlines. So I just can't see a series of mega globals being created. But you could see, you know, Qantas join up with Singapore to form a Pan-Asian giant, because we have a very close relationship with the Singapore government, and that sort of deal could happen. But as for, you know, big takeovers of US airlines and mega giants being created, I'd be surprised.
Well, and you're probably not the right person to ask this, but you're the only person in the room. It's apart from Tamara, but, you know, she's kind of, we're pretending she's not here.
I'm not officially here.
Yeah, that's right. She's just sitting over to the side. But do you think, good or bad news for the consumer? I'm not talking about the shareholder. I'm talking about the average flying person.
That there would be mega airlines?
Yes.
Look, it would probably make the industry more efficient. I mean, I don't know. At one level, governments subsidise airlines around the world. That's why it's such a capital swallower. That's why it churns out, you know, eats up capital and tends to make a loss over time, because governments are prepared to subsidise airlines around the world, subsidise them to fly to places they wouldn't ordinarily fly to for political reasons, such as regional routes in Australia. So at that level, the consumer is partly subsidised. So I don't know. Australian consumers of airlines for a long time were ripped off. These days, we're still ripped off to a degree, because the Qantas is going to make $1.4 billion this year. And it's, you know,
they still can't get a flight from Melbourne to Sydney to leave on time.
Yeah, that's right. And because they're 60% of the Australian market, they can treat their customers with contempt, cancel flights left, right and centre, because they know, you know,
where else do we go?
That's right, exactly. So I think consumers, I just can't see it happening full stop. And at the end of the day, a consumer is protected globally, because taxpayers' money gets thrown into airlines willy-nilly for parochial local reasons.
And I want to quickly talk about Frank Lowy, because he's had a few embarrassing little moments of late. What's going on with him?
Well, I think the past week has probably been one of the worst of Frank's life, I think you'd have to say, because this incredible story of the IT guy who stole all these bank records from the Liechtenstein bank and then sold them to the German government for a few mil, who then on-sold them to authorities around the world. And then a US Senate committee does a big investigation of it, and there's 35,000 pages of documents, of which 35 relate to the Lowy family and Frank. And they've chosen to pick him out as one of eight customers to be hoisted onto a petard and the family hauled before a Senate committee and headlines all around the world for Frank.
It's a bit of sort of sin scapegoating there in some ways. If there's only 35 pages relating to him out of 35,000.
Well, I guess the point is that, you know, there's a lot of transcripts and memos about, you know, there's everything from document destruction and meetings and comments from the lowies that we can never visit Switzerland or Liechtenstein again and we don't want anyone in the world to know about these accounts. And so it looks pretty interesting. And there was a big tax probe in Australia into some of these same dealings back in the early 1990s, which I understand actually delayed Frank's appointment to the Reserve Bank Board by 3 years, because when Keating first ordered Dawkins to put then Treasurer John Dawkins to put him on the board, John Dawkins discovered that there was this big tax audit going on and spoke to Frank and said, "I'm sorry, you can't go on the Reserve Bank Board until you settle your current tax fight." And it was settled in 1995 for $25 million. A couple of tax investigators went on stress leave, claiming it was a bit of a special deal, and Frank subsequently joined the Reserve Bank Board. And then now we discover that after having this scare about his tax affairs potentially jeopardising a very prestigious board seat, that in 96 and 97, there he was having meetings and setting up new tax aggressive tax structures in tax havens. And there's nothing worse than secret bank records falling into the hands of particularly US regulators, because the US are probably toughest in the world when it comes to hauling up the corporates. So poor old Frank Lowy's son, Peter, who's a US resident, therefore is really in the hot seat, will be called to give evidence on Thursday night before the Senate committee. And three people have been called so far out of the gang of eight. Two have pleaded the fifth and said, "I'm not going to incriminate myself," and the other didn't turn up. So Pete Lowy, the world is watching him, and what's he going to say about him and his father's tax affairs to a powerful US Senate committee on Thursday night?
When someone pleads the fifth, which I can't even remember what the Fifth Amendment is.
It's your right to remain silent.
Oh, well, there you go. So if you do that and you don't say anything, then what happens next?
Well, everyone just assumes you're hiding a lot.
Of course they do, but then...
But you can't be charged with disclosing anything because
unless they get evidence elsewhere.
Yeah, and of course they've got, you know, lots of pages of evidence. And so I think it's a tricky situation for Frank, and I think where this will play out is things like his chairmanship of Soccer Australia, which is a government-funded body, and the fact that the tax office has reopened its investigation of the early 90s over some of these same issues. And then things like the fact that his lawyer, who was the advisor in the room with him when he had some of these meetings with these Liechtenstein bankers, was David Gonski, who's the incoming chairman of the Stock Exchange, who takes his position up in October. And former chairman of the Australia Council and big doyen of business and sort of the Graham Samuel of Sydney.
Right.
And so I think there's a lot of, you know, it's a pretty interesting situation and how hard the Rudd government comes down on something like this will be a very interesting test, because obviously everyone knows that, you know, just like Dick Pratt was the biggest donor of the Liberal Party, Frank Lowy's been the biggest donor of the Labor Party. And how all that plays out for, you know, a guy who's the second richest man in Australia after Andrew Forrester will be interesting to watch.
Yes, it will. How long will that take to play out? How long will that investigation take?
Well, I guess I'm not sure about the process with the Americans, but I think the Americans, they're pretty aggressive. So, I mean, to get UBS, which is Europe's biggest bank, the kings of secretive Swiss bankers, you know, Union Bank of Switzerland, up before the Senate committee last week pleading to, you know, stopping forever dealing with US citizens in tax havens was a massive capitulation for the biggest and best and strongest Swiss bank. So if UBS is falling over before this committee, what's poor old Peter Lowy going to do on Thursday night?
Yes.
So, and then what does the tax office do here with all the documents which they've also bought from the naughty IT bloke who stole all these CDs of records?
It's a good story, isn't it? Stephen Mayne, thank you.